T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here. On my podcast today, I have an interview with Mary Rodwell. I've been lucky enough. Victoria from Contact and Desert is allowing me to interview a number of the speakers at the upcoming Contact and Desert online event, which is June the 25th to the 28th. And Mary Rodwell is on that list. So I'm going to play an earlier interview that Mary did for the Winnipeg UFO Group in Winnipeg, Canada. A number of years ago, she spoke for the group when I was running it. And what I wanted her in that interview to talk about was the young children that she works with and the light language that they speak. So I'm going to present the interview she did for the Winnipeg group a number of years ago. And in a couple of weeks, I will have another interview with the latest material that Mary's doing and what she's going to be speaking at when she does Contact in the Desert. So this interview, we had problems with feedback on the computer. So the interview just has Mary's side of the conversation, but it's very, very interesting. And she goes through some very interesting stuff with light language and her children. Please enjoy the interview. For those who are not familiar with light language, here's an example of light language that will give you an idea. It's a number of people have started speaking this in the last couple of years, and its claim is that it's coming from different extraterrestrial or sentient beings. Later on down the road, I will actually play a panel that I had of a bunch of people doing light language. But for people who are not familiar with light language, here's a woman who speaking light language on the internet who never ever did become really public, but she put some light language that she had done on the internet.
Once you tell a good Tiana, so yes, okay, oh yes, she had none of his years of the kitchen and I am a totally. As a television, that he eat to the eat to the kitchen, the judge to the Michu Tatari tutory. As a television, the kitchen, the biki, a kakia, that's a television, the kitchen, the mental set of the kitchen. A tie, oh yes, it would be gia, koha, he a ka, a tata, and men of the bit of the kitchen, the kitchen, the jira, she had no, oh, ya, a ka, oh, ya, she had none, ya, whoop.
Right. Good agenda. Well, hi, everyone. I'm going to give you a very brief overview of how I got into this first, just because I know that this is something that shifts all our paradigms and researchers in the room, as well as those that are experiencers. I know that you can't help but be touched by it, whether or not you're having experiences or conscious experiences, or whether you're involved in the phenomena for one reason or another. I came in primarily as a nurse midwife. I was led into counseling 30 years ago. And from that counseling, really, I realized that people had a whole range of human experiences, some of them accepted by psychology as being okay, some not accepted by psychology as not being okay, and therefore there's something wrong with you. One of the things that I have learned very experientially, as well as from a more academic point of view, is that we are all having experiences that cannot be put in that box. That psychology is today, in the consensus, is a very limited way of looking at human experience. And I shall probably get hung and quartered for that in some areas. But as far as I'm concerned, the way that we look at human experience in a traditional model is completely inaccurate, because I believe we're all multidimensional. We all have information coming to us that is not linear, that we sense, feel, and know things. And this is really important, I found, in the work that I do. Many people who've had grief experiences will sense and feel the loved one near them, for example. So when I did grief and bereavement counseling and hospice counseling, I was aware people were having things happen to them that couldn't be quantified in the normal way. But my introduction to all of this was about 20 years ago, when a lovely gentleman came to see me. He said, "Mary, I've heard you're open-minded. For this, there's no support groups. For this, they just think you're crazy." And so from that introduction, this middle-aged, very articulate man started to tell me about his experience, where he'd been face-offed, woke up with marks on his body, shaved areas. And the fascinating thing for me was it was actually the whole family that were having experiences, not just him. Ellis Taylor is his name. He's an author of 4 books himself now. And what was also very synchronous, and many of you will understand that word, whether you call it coincidence or not, is that I'd prior to that read 2 books. And one of them was Communion by Whitley Strieber, and the other one was by Dr. John Mack, the Harvard professor of psychiatry, who wrote Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. He also wrote Passport to the Cosmos. I happened to coincidentally pick these up a couple of months before Ellis walked through my door. So it was almost like I was being prepared for this whole new aspect of my world and reality. There was no way at any time could I dismiss what Ellis was telling me, because it was so obvious to me that this was a reality for him. I took it to counseling. I was doing advanced counseling at the time, and I used it as a case study, wondering whether or not I was going to get a lot of flack for it in a traditional way. But what was fascinating, and this is really crucial here, is when I mentioned the case, and I was talking to other psychologists, and I was talking to social workers that were all doing advanced counseling, not one of them said they thought that Ellis was crazy, but they all started to tell me about their own strange experiences. So he was actually presented then with the fact that it wasn't just those having these kinds of encounters, that we all had things that didn't fit the box. And this is really where this took me down this road, and it's been a complete life changer for me. So in essence, that's what started me on this journey. So there's more to that, but that I think is enough for everyone to know. What I have found is that I have needed to challenge everything I've ever believed, and every experiencer in the room will know what I'm talking about. Once they have this experience, their life changes forever. How much they embrace it is up to them. And it's a process of coming to terms with it and trying to gain understanding. And that is part of what my job is. is when people come to me, first of all, they want to be heard. They, you know, the important thing for me is the fact that I hear them. There is no judgment in how they understand their experiences. And if they want to look at other parts of their experience that they don't remember fully, then what I will do is assist them through hypnosis to explore the information in a more, if you like, a holistic way. In other words, the subconscious, if you like, regurgitates the experience in a broader context, because our conscious mind will only accept certain things, whereas our subconscious literally puts lays it on the table in metaphorically and literally, so that you will see and experience and what happened. If you had missing time, for example, or you have flashbacks, we can look at the whole scenario. But what is really important here, and I know the researchers there and those that have had experiences, you want understanding and why. Those are the big questions. It isn't just, yes, I've been taken on a spacecraft maybe once or multiple times. You actually want to know the reason why it's you. What's it all about? The big questions. Why me? Why my family? What's it all about? You know, what's my part in all of that? And this is where it's really important that the hypnotherapist asks the right questions. And so for me, when I work with someone, what I say to them is this: what is it you want to know? Not what I want to know, Mary, but what do they want to know? And those are the kinds of questions that we ask in those. So we can say to them, you know, if they're seeing themselves on a craft, maybe have procedures done, they may not have any idea what those procedures are. Then we need to find out what is going on. You know, are they taking genetic material? Is there a healing procedure? What is it is happening there? And in that space, the subconscious, superconscious can actually answer. And you can have a dialogue in that space. And for anyone who wants to see the way that I work, I've got several clips of sessions on YouTube where you can see that it's about what questions do you ask. And this isn't just about proving someone's on a craft. We can all show the scenario, but it's actually more important to know what that scenario means. I hope you're all hearing me okay, but let me know if not. So, good. So, in essence, my job, I see it as facilitating more understanding so that I can provide the invite either just by somebody wanting to talk about it and be heard, maybe for the first time in their lives, someone's actually listened openly to however this has unfolded for them. And also then, if they want to, look at a deeper level of understanding. And for those of you that have problems with maybe accepting the information via hypnosis, Dr. John Mack, who was, after all, a professor of psychiatry, he said that he believed information that was delivered through hypnosis had more integrity and was more accurate than conscious recall. And the reason for that is the subconscious doesn't edit out what isn't acceptable. It actually says it as it is. So, in other words, if you find that you are being taken, maybe not physically, but astrally, to another planet, which many say to me feels like my home planet, feels like my family, or interdimensionally, or to other lifetimes where they've not been human. Quite honestly, we go where the subconscious needs to go. And I've been to places that I never believed could exist or is possible. But what really matters is if that makes sense to the individual. So it's up to them to decide how much of that they're prepared to accept in terms of their own journey. So having said all that, that's in essence the way I work. I'm working with a person's reality. I don't believe any of us have a right to tell somebody else what is real and not real. Because to be honest, all of us got only a small window on what I think our multidimensional reality is. This leads me into not only what I'm seeing as patterns of experience. When I give a presentation, I want to give as broad a brush as possible. One of the things that I'm covering here is the intergenerational nature of experiences. And with that, what I mean is that I have seen through the generations what appears to be upgrades in terms of awareness. So each generation, and we can call that, you know, what's been noticed in the spiritual context is they call them indigo children. They may call them the children of light, rainbow children. I believe that that is another word for that, for me, is human or the star children or the upgrades or the second or third waves that Dolores Cannon talks about. Each generation has new skills, new awareness. And two scientists that tell me they believe that this upgrade is genetic, in the sense it's almost like parts of us are being switched on. And they believe that this is what seeing as ADHD, Asperger's, dyslexia, some kinds of autism, because these are new programs, we believe, in a multidimensional nature. So each one of them has skills. In other words, there's certain types of autism. They're discovering that the children are more telepathic than the average human is. So that's an interesting. Both Asperger's and the dyslexics, I believe, are seeing more of a broader spectrum of reality. And I'm working with a scientist in Sweden who I've just been talking about. She's coming out of the space closet, as we call it. You know, she's finally owning that she is an experiencer as a scientist. And she calls herself a letter person. In other words, she's Asperger's stroke ADHD. And so are her family. She said that she's got more senses on the ends of her fingers and body. She sees a broader spectrum of color. She has also a fine hearing sensitivity. And she said, and this is what makes it very hard for these new programs to operate, because they're being programmed into a reality that to them is very minimal, very limited. And in other words, it's like they're seeing, we are in a third dimensional, seeing the world through the eye of a needle, but they're seeing the whole picture. And so they are blitzed by what they're experiencing, which isn't fitting in with what they're being told is real. In fact, some of them have to learn what solid is, because they see everything as energy. And this is what the children are telling me, and why I think the children are so important. And this to me is very crucial, is that they, when they talk about their experiences, they have past life recall, they are seeing energy, they are often telepathic, they know they've come here with something to do. They will tell you their origins. And to give you an example of one young man in the US, only about a month ago, I was speaking to his father, and the 9-year-old came in to speak to me. And I said, well, why is it you want to speak to me? Why do you feel you need to talk to me? And he said a very interesting thing. He said, it's because of your frequency. And then he proceeded to tell me that he was from Orion, that he worked on higher technologies, including technologies to do with time travel. He called light physicist. And other words said, even on this planet, the scientists today, he said, they still are not at that level of understanding true physics in the way he does. He said, the nearest that gets to what I understand, he said, was Tesla. He says, I'm like another Tesla. Now, this is a 9-year-old child speaking to me on these very deep and profound concepts. But he's not the only one. I have 7-year-olds that tell their parents that they've been up on spacecraft, they're taken to other planets, they're taught how to levitate things. And, you know, what's really fascinating is when you get 3 7-year-old girls all saying they've been on spacecraft, some of them being taken to other planets, and there's other beings on there that aren't human, and all saying similar things, 2 in the US, 1 in Melbourne. You have to say, where is this coming from? Because their concepts that they're speaking about are profound. And to get back to the questions around the scripts, the languages, and all those things, this to me has been an amazing, for me, confounding that this hasn't been looked at in and given it credibility, because we know that ufology for the last 78 years has wanted to bring the nuts and bolts science into this so that it can gain credibility. And that's been extremely important, and we all know that, but it's been limited because it's only still concentrating on the physical aspects. Yes, have you seen a craft? How big was it? Have we got any witnesses, you know, all those kinds of things are important. But what has been missed and not been looked at is all the other aspect of the physical thing, primarily because we're still struggling to get academia and psychology to own we're multidimensional. And only through the latest quantum physics, the holographic understanding of the universe, the connection to everything, can we explain all the other things that go with contact, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, past life recall, telepathic abilities, all these things that have not been accepted as okay within ufology because they've not been, if you like, we haven't been able to quantify them in a way that mainstream science wants to accept. And that's the model that has to change. And really what FREE is doing, it's taking it from the nuts and bolts, and it's taking the whole panorama of how somebody experiences their contact. The abduction side, the traumatic side, as we found with the surveys in FREE, is only about 25 or 30% of those kinds of experiences. And some of those are my lab. They're not even ET. And I can get into that more for those that want to know. But the most traumatized are human abductions that we call MILAB, the military abductions. They're the most traumatic of all. And this is what is not understood. 70%, and this has fitted in with my research with CERN, we found with the, I think, 13 or 1400 surveys we've done now, is 70% of experiences are positive. 70%. Now, this is not what you hear. We've got the data to show this, and this is why it's so important, because there are many things, there's been many misconceptions about this whole experience. And if you've got 70% that are having beneficial, loving, positive experiences with humanoids, with mantid, with a range of different types of beings, and this is part of what FREE is collating now in these surveys, is really the information that covers how many of them have had out-of-body experiences, how many of them have had near-death experiences, how many of them see themselves as hybrids, walk-ins. You know, these are all the terms, star seeds, dual consciousness. How do you understand your experience? All of it is relevant. We can't say, oh, well, you're in, you're out. If you are having experiences where you're contacting or being contacted either telepathically or physically in the way that they're coming into your room or you're seeing them or you're aware of having as a contactee, it's all contact with non-human intelligences. It's all part of the panorama. And they're interdimensional. They can be transdimensional. They can be visitors from our future. They could be, and for those that are mediumistic and clairvoyant, you may see them as guides. Or, you know, somebody may say, well, I see angels. Someone else will interpret that as light beings. It's inclusive of however your contact happens. And this is happening globally. And everybody interprets it differently, and they may not understand what they're experiencing is interactions with these beings. But the evidence of a reality is not just craft or you've got, you know, you're there with other people seeing something, you've got a picture of it. Evidence is the transformative change, where after seeing a craft or having experience, you look at life differently. And I'm sure many of those in the room know what I'm talking about. Your focus completely changes from the old paradigm to one where you are focused on the bigger picture, your spiritual journey, your lifestyle may become more holistic. You may find yourself focused on things you've never been interested before, from, you know, the history of our origins to physics to a holistic lifestyle to healing. All these things are evidence that something profound has happened to you. And if that's happened for you, then you can bet your bottom dollar that in some way you have had some of interaction. And it may not be the same as somebody else because you're unique and you're different. And so for me, when I put my questionnaires out, it takes in some important things that would not be accepted by academia, maybe, or science. And it's about knowings, feelings, senses, or that feeling of information that you've not consciously learned, which will download or knowledge bombs, as an eight-year-old told me. Because this is all of it to your personal experience. If it's changed your life and the way that you focus and what's important to you, And it's real, because hallucinations do not do that. Fantasy do not do that. And this is something that for me is, you know, is absolute, you know, I'll just say it's common sense, isn't it? You don't get changed by some, you know, fantasy. So the reality is, if you've been changed by whatever experience it is you've had, then it's real. But I'm going to take you further down the rabbit hole, because part of my focus and what I've been fascinated in and how this hasn't been valued before as much as I think it needs to be, is all the other parts of how people express their contact. It may be through scripts. They're doing strange scripts that may look like hieroglyphs, or it may look like shorthand. And there are strange drawings, artwork, not only drawing the beings, but drawing strange landscapes or geometric forms with strange writing in them. They may start to articulate star languages, which I call them that because we're not sure where they originate from. But these languages are being spoken by people across the globe who always, you know, I've had them say to me, Mary, I don't know where it comes from, but it's totally natural to me. And even some of them are spoken in their sleep. And I've had people write to me and say, my wife says that I start speaking these strange languages in my sleep. And I don't know what they are or why I do that. So what is that? What is that part of this experience? And then we have the children doing the same thing, where I have a 9-year-old from Sweden talking to me, and her mother saying she speaks 3 star languages and saying one of them heals water. And actually she did this over Skype. This 9-year-old spoke to me over Skype, and she spoke the language that she speaks to water, where she says it purifies water, it heals water. So strange as that may be to many that listen to this, you only have to look at the research. And anyone who's familiar with Masaru Emoto, the Japanese scientist, who has already shown through his books Messages in Water that the very nature and molecules of water can be altered and changed by frequency, by music, by language, by intent, by prayer. What is this young girl doing? She's speaking a frequency to water, and it's being reprogrammed. So these are the kinds of things where I've looked at these and said, well, if they're doing it, there's got to be a reason. There's always got to be a reason. So for me, is what is the reason? What is the purpose of this? And I'm watching the time, because I know that you might like to ask questions, but there's one more thing that for me is very valuable about the children. I get adults that can translate some of those languages. I've got adults that not only speak it, understand. They call it light language, universal language. Sometimes they speak this language for healing, which again isn't so strange if we understand its frequency. And if that frequency affects us on some level, because we're 70% water, we also know that human language can alter the nature of DNA, because there's been Russia research that has demonstrated human language can alter the nature of DNA or reprogram its structure. So star language are just another frequency. So it all ties in. Once you start to look at the science behind it, and this is what the experiencer is telling you, they may not have the scientific language, but you have to look beyond that and say, what is it actually that's going on there? Which has been something I feel like almost a bit like an Agatha Christie, a cosmic Agatha Christie, really. Where are the clues? Where are the mysteries? And how can we understand it in normal terms that most of us can understand? But with that, to give you, before I can conclude, and I've got so much more I would love to share, but what I would like to say to you is, when you have a 7-year-old, this 7-year-old's in Queensland, her mother told me that she was looking through my book, which is Awakening, and in it is a script. And this 7-year-old was looking at her mother, looking through the book, and she saw the script, and this 7-year-old said to her mother, I can read that. And her mother said, well, can you do that for me? And this young girl actually read it to her and explained to her what it was. The mother contacted me and said, Mary, my daughter can read this script. And this beautiful little confident 7-year-old over Skype I said to her, could you read it to me? And she said, oh, yes. Do you want it in the language or do you want it in English? And I said, can you do both? She said, oh, yes. So she comes out with the language. She reads it. She then translates it into English for me. And then I said to her, do you know where the source is, where it comes from? Oh, yes. She said, that's from the Greys. Right. I also met up with this young lady a little bit later, and I got a whole book of different scripts. And I asked her, were there any others that she could read? She went through and she said, some I can't read, this one I can. And again, she did the identical thing. She spoke in the language, she translated it, and I asked her the source of that particular language. And she said, that's the Greys and the Mandans. Now, this is a seven-year-old girl that's telling me this. I also have had, and many of you might have seen the artwork by Tracy Taylor. I had a lady only recently, in the last couple of months, write to me and said her eight-year-old son looked at those drawings because she had said, I didn't tell him anything. I just wanted to know his thoughts. And he said with the drawings, he said, oh, those are from ETs. He said in them, he said, is that they are energy generators. It was related. These drawings, Tracy Taylor had done, ancient architecture, some of the other ones, and actually telling his mum what he saw of them and how they were transporters. This is an eight-year-old child that's looking at drawings he's never seen before, and the parents are very careful that they don't want this. But if they, you know, they may just say, you know, what do you feel about this or what about that? They've had experiences, and as we know, often children will talk about going up on spacecraft, different beings they meet. And as this eight-year-old that lives in Queensland that I've worked with told me, the mantid are his family. So the mantid beings are actually his family, but he's having a human experience at the moment. And he's here because he can communicate with us. And he also wants people to understand animals. I've given you a very small snippet of why kids are important and why we have to listen to them. But what I'm really saying is, what we're hoping to do, and CERN has done in its limited way because I don't have the resources, what FREE is doing is looking at this from a consciousness perspective, even though it's the foundation for extraterrestrial encounters, it's actually looking at human consciousness. And we've got astrophysicists and psychophysicists, we've got two professors of psychology that are helping us, Dr. Klimo and Dr. Leo Sprinkle. So we're bringing in academia, we're bringing in science, but we're bringing also the mandate of human experience and saying we have to look at a new model, and hopefully FREE will be part of instigating or being a catalyst for a new model. Now, I have at least in a very broad brush some of what my work is about, and I would like to know what people would like to know from what I've spoken about. The message itself was about taking care of our environment. That we, you know, that we're destroying our environment, and we've got to start taking, if you like, care of from a number of levels. What the children have told me is not many. Many of them feel they can communicate with animals, and they feel and sense what's going on around them energetically. And it's about now with these new children helping us to understand more of our multidimensional nature and listening to them. But that was primarily the message, that we are destroying our planet and we really have to do something now to start addressing that. The three main messages are that we're heading for a major shift in terms of human consciousness. This is coming from around the globe. But what was interesting was the nine-year-old that told me the crucial time was between 2012 and 2017. That was the framework or the time frame that she gave me. Many of them are saying that we're already in this process of, if you like, an evolutionary shift, a frequency shift. And this is about a shift in consciousness. It may also involve, you know, planetary changes as well. But they've come in to help with that. They've come in to help once this starts, because they will help us understand from that other level what we need to do to manage that shift and to understand more of how that up in terms of our consciousness and our environment. That's the first thing. The second thing is that this 12-year-old that says he's from Arcturus said, we've been here three times before in at this level of awareness. And what he's saying is, we really have to get it right this time. So he was explaining that, you know, there have been times in our history where we're very close to this, but it's like, you know, this we really have to get right. And a lot of the reason they're coming at the moment is because of that. The first thing I'd like to say is for those very important that as the 9-year-old in Little Girl City, Mary, human beings, she said, are so amazing and they have got such incredible potential. But she says they won't realize it until they believe it. So it's almost like we've got to let go of all the ways that we are programmed into believing we're limited, that we can't do things, and actually accept that we have, if you like, the potential to be incredible in terms of who we are and what we are and what we can achieve. And part of this shift is to show us that, because these children are already demonstrating the ability to shift and alter matter, to actually remote, not only remote view, but to they can remote influence, they can, if you like, affect the structure of things. A lot of these children that are being born that in unseen as super psychics, where they can actually read from various parts of their body, even though they're blindfolded, that can actually alter matter itself, that they can do these amazing types of healing. They are able to sense the truth. For example, I got a letter from an engineer in Texas who told me that his daughter was telling him about different types of ETs, and he wanted to know on the internet which ones she said were real ones, and not just the made-up ones that we get so much disinformation on the internet. And she actually went through hundreds, and there was only about 5% she picked out that said, these are real ones. Now, how is it a 7-year-old girl can access that information? Because they can see, what, you know, energies of emotions and feelings, they can sense the disinformation. So what's wonderful about that is that we've got these children to help us to understand what's going on, because we are being bombarded with a whole matrix of disinformation and primarily fear. And this is the other thing too, that when you get to a certain frequency, as one 16-year-old told me, when you get to a certain frequency, the fear frequency can affect you, and you can't be affected by what is actually going on the planet anymore, because you've reached frequency that they can't tap. But you've got to get beyond your own fear first to do that. Are we talking about live in consciousness here? If I understand right, that as you change frequency, you access this multidimensional reality. Is that what we're being asked about here? Because I want to be sure I've got the question. Okay. Is it random or predetermined in terms of you having an experience? Well, there's two things I want to say from the many hundreds of regressions that I've done. And it's really important, because everyone wants to know what's their heart in why they are having these experiences, you know, even on if they don't understand on a conscious level. One of the questions that I ask when they're in that subconscious, superconscious state, and I say superconscious because we seem to access a part of the higher knowing of someone. You can call it superconscious, higher self, whatever, but it's a very, very deep, profound aspect of them. And I will ask when they're having that experience, have you on any level consented to this experience? And 9 times out of 10 they say yes, but before I came here. In other words, it's a pre-life agreement for many of them. And I will say to them, does this make sense to you? And they will, you know, that they may be reluctant because it's been challenging and maybe very scary, they will say yes, because it enabled me to understand. And there is also a trade in gifts through the experience. And they will say that many of the beings that they've interacted with are actually family. They may say, one of them is actually my family from the, you know, I've agreed to come in human form and experience things as a human, and then I will relate back my understanding from a human perspective to my family, which my star family, for example. And so that it brings in a whole new understanding for people, because they see this is a soul journey. This is not just the human journey. This is a complete level of understanding. And it's not for me to say, well, that's right or that's wrong. All I say to them is, does that make sense? Does that resonate? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, yes, it's more difficult than I thought it was. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And sometimes I just want to go, because it's not nice on this planet. I don't like it. It's very primitive. And why would I have agreed to this if I'd known prior to this how hard it was going to be? Maybe I wouldn't have come. Maybe you can relate that, but that's what they may say to me. Yes, although what I've discovered is when I take somebody into hypnosis and they may think that their first experience was when they were 20 or 30, when I ask them, how many times have you been, had an encounter with these particular beings, they're off, you know, 1, 2, 5, 7, 10, 15, or whatever it is. And then their subconscious has recalled the other times they've been picked up. So although you may only remember one time where you've had an encounter, you may have actually had more of a lifelong one. Sometimes it's astral, so that your physical body will not leave, but you will go in a dream state to the craft or to other planets or whatever it is. So it can be both of those. But I think that what I'm seeing is that everyone who comes in as a soul has a different mandate, a different process for waking up to their connections to these star family or star beings that they're connected to. So for some people, it will be they'll remember even as a small child they've been picked up. But for others, it may be that they may be 40, they may be 50, they may even be 60 and always felt different, always felt they never belonged, always wondered why they struggled with this barbaric planet and try to make sense. And it goes with those that call themselves walk-ins. And again, this is fascinating, where they remember come in to a physical body at maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years old and saying how strange it was to find themselves in a human container, having to learn how to be human. And one lady told me that she remembers coming in on a cylindrical craft. She was 9 feet tall, blonde hair, blue eyes, telepathic, and absorbed nutrients through light, and was suddenly in a 3-year-old girl's body and having to learn how to speak, because prior to that she was telepathic, and having to learn how to eat. And she's always called herself a bit of an undercover agent, she said, because I go regularly up to my star family and I tell them what it's like to be human. Many people have the walk-in experience as well. So this is so broad, and we're only touching the tip of the iceberg in understanding how we're being interacted with by all these different intelligences that are part of the matrix that are visiting Earth. Good question. And thank you for sharing with such openness. Yes, the answer is there are many people around the globe that are bringing in the codes through the languages. I know quite a number that also know that they're bringing in the light languages with the codes, and that these trigger, if you like, individuals to open up and raise frequency. One of the reasons I do my presentations the way that I do, as I lead people down this rabbit hole, is that I play languages or I show scripts. And that is actually another way of people being triggered, because they'll see something within the scripts or they'll hear one of the languages and that will shift something in them. And one was recently a nurse who found, after she heard the language in my presentation, immediately had to write down this strange script that was just flowed from her from hearing a particular language. So I agree, and you know, that this is happening. You're one of, I believe, many of the cogs that have come down to bring in the codes, to bring in, if you like, those frequencies that are activating other people. And I've had many come to my offices here and they say, you know, they're a keeper of some codes or whatever, or almost like a transfer of codes, because energetically, as we are exposed to these frequencies, we're also spreading them across the globe, almost like a pebble in a pond. You know, you, as you're doing it, it is actually gathering momentum. And the children, of course, understand this as well. The fact that you are connected and that you're working on that level is wonderful, because there are so many people that don't want to go there with this because they're afraid of it. They're afraid of their abilities. And many of them that come to me may come from a religious belief system or a system that says this is dangerous, or, you know, you're going to bring in demons or whatever. And again, it's all the fear frequency. Primarily, we're being tasked now, I believe, as we go to a higher frequency, to all have a connection to these intelligences, to tap into, you know, I call it the non-physical team that are assisting all of us to help with this process of awakening, whichever we want to call it, the ascension or just an upgrading. It doesn't really matter. It's how it feels comfortable for you. But for many of them, it's, you know, there's a fear factor. It can be safe if I do this. Look, this is part of our DNA. This is part of who we are. I had a lady who had a three-year-old child that says her daughter is telepathic, and everything that she thinks, her daughter will then articulate or mention to her. She tunes in to everyone around her. She said, my daughter is completely telepathic. She says, my problem is that I know that I have to be so careful about everything I think about because my daughter will articulate it. So it's forcing me to be so careful. And she's really hard to think in a pure, loving way continually. But I have to, because my daughter will tap into it. So we're all being taught to raise our level of how we think, how we behave, both on multiple levels. I think, you know, this is the start. And what you're talking about is exactly the start of how this is going to manifest. And we're going to have to start resourcing each other and accepting however that may manifest for you. And this is the problem a lot of people have, don't they? Oh, you're a bit crazy, you're a bit weird, you're this, that, and the other. And yet, more and more are going to get crazy and weird before we're done, because this, I believe, is where we're going. We're going into a place of conscious contact with these intelligences, and I believe a lot of it will be telepathic. So that's my answer to you. Yes, there are many around the globe. Many of them write to me, and they will tell me about their understanding of the beings and what they are doing about it. And this scientist that I speaking with and visiting in a few months, because I'm going to Sweden, she's interacted with 12 different intelligences, and right from, you know, the mantid beings to beings of light, and she's had lots of shamanic experiences. She's also been taught how to use her understanding as a scientist to energize water, that's part of her healing techniques. So given all of that, the answer is yes. And that is why I hope that Free can help us more with those, because some have had thyroid problems, for example, and this may be to do with something that happens on the craft. Some of them have also had what we call missing pregnancies, where they've been left with marks or scars. Even if they've never had a child, gynecologically it will be picked up that they've got scars, which would suggest something's happened, but they've never had, you know, a pregnancy at all. So that's to do with, and missing pregnancies are a whole nother ballgame, where many people, obviously women, that will say to me, I think I've got children or hybrids on the craft. So that can lead issues of grief, that can lead issues of, you know, fear because of that, although some of them are accepting of it because they say, look, I know I agree to this. So it's a real mix of, you know, psychological issues. Some of the other psychological issues are obviously, you know, the phobias of either being in elevators or passageways. Long passageways can create flashbacks and fear. Needles are another one. Fears of clowns, Santa Claus, owls with big eyes, cats with big eyes, screen memories of being visited often as a child. If you've got any, your children have got fears to do with that. I've also found a lot of the children seem to have a problem with wetting the bed, and often it may be for some years much older than I there. It may be due to being picked up as a child or whatever. These are things we really do need to look at and understand. That's without, of course, the implants, the marks left on the body that people don't always understand, triangular marks, rashes the next day. A lot of these we know fluoresce under black ultraviolet light, but there'll be a whole range of things with that as well that I think we need medical research into. but thyroid is certainly one of them. There may be others. We do seem to, seems to be a run on Rh negatives that seem to, there's a highlight with a lot of experiences being Rh negative as well. So there are all these medical things that I think we need to collate and work out, because we don't know where those originate. These to do with the brain, these to do with a mix of, you know, the magnitude of the geneticists and work with timelines. Is it to do with various humanoids? Is it to do with the military and the MyLab? There are all these questions that you want to understand. And so we really have to get a grip on the research and the many ways that, you know, this affects us in our everyday lives, you know, in as well as waking up feeling completely blitzed the next day because you've been off doing things on a craft or whatever, and you've got no energy the next day because of that. So that there's a whole range of medical things that I would love to be able to address at some point. I've done quite a number. And if anyone would like the links to, I've done one with Peter Slattery, and that's on YouTube. I've done one with a lady in Ohio, where these were filmed ones, but I've actually done many to the US, the UK, the Netherlands, Sweden, and New Zealand and other parts of Australia. It is more than feasible, and it was something I wasn't sure was going to work. I've even done it over the phone, which is not very often. Skype's better because at least we can see one another. And it works. 9 times out of 10, it works. I've had, I think I've only had one case where it didn't work, and that's been individual fearful. It's just about more often, it's about trusting the, you know, who you're having facilitated. That the trust is the big thing. And I spend quite a bit of time encouraging a dialogue before we start, and also asking all the questions, finding out all the questions. One of the things you'll notice with the one I did with Peter Slattery is a strange, rather unusual thing happened with him. And with that, it was that halfway through his regression, one of his guides came in and spoke to him. So it was partly him speaking about a strange experience, and then energetically something shifted, and this being which he knew and he'd already communicated with came into him energetically. And I could see the difference because they, you know, the whole energy changes, but also the way they vocalize things change. And Peter was spoken about in the third person. And it does happen occasionally when he's in that relaxed state, then some other being will use that opportunity to say what is necessary or helpful to the individual that is seeking answers. So that will sometimes happen. That's okay, because I can usually work out very quickly what's going on. But yes, I answer that. It is more than feasible. It's just a matter of being receptive and also having trust in the individual that's doing it. Well, because we didn't expect that with Peter, he had his own questions that we'd covered. And because I saw what happened, I was able then to say, well, now what would Peter like to know? So I thought of things that perhaps because of my, you know, we talked and had a lot of communication that I thought would be helpful to Peter. But I also do something that happens. I speak to the being and saying, what is it that is going to be most helpful for Peter at this time to understand? So you put it in the ball court, if you like, the being, to then explain what they want somebody to know. And you can do that even if the being, there's no other entity there. When you're talking to the subconscious, superconscious, one of the protocols I have is to say, I'd like to talk to the higher part of you or the most aware part of you. Is there anything you want the conscious part of you to understand? So you're making it available for that other part of them to talk to the conscious part of them. And you would be amazed at some of the information that comes through that way. It's like, you know, again, you're giving permission to the consciousness or the essence of that in that part to speak and share what's important. I'll say, for this moment in time, is there anything else they need to know for this moment in time? So I maximize the chance while they're in that space to get as much information that I think may be helpful to that individual. And I will even ask the conscious part to talk to the superconscious part and say, have you any more questions to that other part of you? And they may say, well, I would like this. Okay, so let's ask that. And you get the response. So it's amazing what you can access just primarily taking somebody into an altered state and working with that process to get as much as possible. And it really can be quite proud. All right, well, I'll start for you. If you just bear with me a second. I'm just trying to see what I've got here. You'll have to just bear with me a second. Let me see. Let me have a look here. Let me see. Let me just find one for you. Let's see what we've got here. I'm just trying to find the children's one. I'll play you the children's one if I can just find it. Let me just see. This is the 9-year-old one, if I can just get that for you. So just bear with me a second. Here we go. I'll play this for you. Oh, that's doing it. Always when I try very hard, where I can find it. Just hold on a minute. Listening to me talk to myself, it's actually very good because I realize I'm talking to somebody really intelligent when I talk to myself. So that's what you say, you see, when you get to a certain age. You say you're just talking to somebody intelligent, and then, you know, that sort of lets you off the hook, or at least I believe it does. Here we go. Okay. This is a 9-year-old speaking a language. One of the languages she spoke to me over Skype. This is one. What I'd like to, one of the latest presentations that I've done is a lady that sent me a little boy who communicates to a meteorite. And what's fascinating is he says that he only needs to put his finger on the meteorite and the meteorite talks to him. Now, I don't know where you are with all of that, but I think it would be really interesting for you to just, if I can just find it. The trouble is I've so much on the computer at the moment. I'm just trying to find that, see if I can find it for you. This one, I'll just play you. This is a farmer who believed he was going crazy and found that by listening to languages, it woke him up to, and he came into my office and we were talking about it. And I said, can you speak one? Now, this is him spontaneously. He's in his late 50s, thought he was going crazy. I'll just play you how he spoke.
Thank you. There you go.
That was spontaneous from a lovely farmer in Queensland. Just came out. And he didn't realise that his son, who was 20, who was autistic, could speak a language as well. And as I was chatting to them, I said to his son, because they both seen craft, and I said to his son, you know, he'd watched the DVD with the languages on it, the visual blueprint. And he said, one of them, I can speak. And this, the first time his father had ever heard him speak it, it was exactly the same as Tracy Taylor's. Her language. And his father was completely bothered. His son could speak this language. He'd never mentioned it before. So this is the thing, even the family, when you've got father and son both seen craft, neither of them realised the other could speak these languages. It was only while I was talking about it, it virtually gave them a reminder they both actually spoke these languages. And that's the same family. I mean, I find this quite incredible. Do you want to hear more or is that enough? So I can tell you where some are from. I'll play you Arcturian if I can find this particular young man, because he speaks Arcturian. His name is, and he calls himself an ambassador from Arcturus. He's 17, he lives in New Zealand. He calls himself an ecological engineer, and this is his Arcturian language. I'll play it for you now. Do they know where it comes from? Do they recognize it from where they're from? Okay. Well, he calls himself Ambassador Ilani, and he does this, these amazing drawings. And he's come in as an ecological engineer, because when things shift, he will be building, if you like, environments that will be in harmony with the planet. That's how he understands himself. Wonderful. Oh, look, send me a linguist, please. Look, I have so many that are sent to me, some spoken in somebody's sleep, right through to some that do it very consciously or are triggered into it. I would love help with the scripts. I would love help with understanding where the basis of some of the languages may come from, whatever. But I'm not a linguist. I mean, I've got no way of understanding other than the fact I know it's important. You know when something's significant. And that's why I've collected them. And the other wonderful thing is that when I hear some of these languages, like today, there'll be somebody in the room that recognizes them. Or it seems to affect us energetically. I know that when I play some of these and I've heard them, I feel different afterwards. It's almost like on some level, I recognize some of them, but I don't know how I recognize them. I think this is like reminding us of maybe our origins, because if we are, what is it, a collection of 22 species, which many, this seems to be the latest information coming through, maybe these different languages are connected to these different star families, and it's part of our waking up of our DNA. I suspect it's something to do with that. But again, I only know, work it out from a very, from my own perspective. So I don't know, but that's what makes sense to me anyway. Oh, I feel there's a whole orchestration of things being put into place on another level. I think we're all part of it. I think we're all cogs in a matrix of planning that probably has been set up by goodness knows how many intelligences. So I just think we're just walking the walk and trusting that we get it as it comes and have an affinity for children. I'm a grandmother. I'm a mother of three kids. I've got four granddaughters. The kids really, I connect with kids. And I feel that they feel that. But I also think, yes, this is probably meant to be my focus is with children. And we've all got a role to play, I believe, and it's all being set up. So I don't think anything's random. I think everything is very well orchestrated. And I have absolute trust in that, because I think in the end, that's all we've got. Because we really don't know what's going on, do we? Not really. I'm cool with that, because I've always said to whoever it is that supports me, keep it interesting and I'll hang around, because I'm not good with getting bored. So you better keep interesting, and they've been keeping it extremely interesting. I think it makes sense that they may be the origin of the languages on Earth. And if we are a mixture of 22 species, all the different languages on the planet that we have. And I think like everything else, just like English and French and all these other languages, they've evolved over the centuries and millennia to what they are today. But very likely that still has the integrity of when these beings first interacted with us and, if you like, created us with their own DNA. So the Russian scientists are correct and saying that we can be altered by human language depending on the right language. Maybe this is also what's happening now, is these languages are going back to affecting the very nature of our DNA in that picking up or that switching on of our genes to be more of what we are. That's how I feel it possibly could work. what I always do, even if it's just, I don't mean just in a minimalistic way, but just seeing a UFO with friends or whatever, I never take that as just a sighting. It may just be first contact because they may have actually had a download or had a shift happen or time's being manipulated and they think it's just a few seconds, but it may actually be more than that. I send them a questionnaire. And this questionnaire is a lot broader than the standard because it takes in dreams, it takes in feelings, it takes in knowings. It takes in the fact that you may have always felt different, that you've, you know, felt you belonged. It takes in your consent fields. It takes in whether you sense presences around you. It takes in, do you feel you've had downloads of information or you not have consciously learned? With that, I'm not sending out them for them to prove anything to me, because it's not about me, it's about them. What I'm doing is I'm sending it to them and I'm saying, make of this what you will. If any of it makes sense to you, it may help you to understand more about yourself. A lot of people don't realize this is relevant to them because they've never heard about it. And because it, the only thing that they see on the tape is abductions, the classic kind of scenario. And they say, well, that's not me. So it can't be me then. But actually 70% are having it in a far more subtle, far more loving and a completely different way to those 30% that are having a more tragic kind of shamanic experience like the abduction. I'm not sure. I haven't actually asked. She actually spoke three to me, but they come, she said, from her two guides. One of them is Imoke, who's a blue being, and she's also a green being, who also, I might add, told her that, well, she told me that they gave her seven books, not books in the traditional sense, but seven downloads to do with information. And she described them. What she was saying was that with these books, I can just briefly tell you, she said one book was about creation and our origins. The brown one's about different planets and life there. The green one's about nature and how we can make contact with plants, animals, and how we understand nature. The dark green one's about the body and how it works and how we get to evolve. The book's about truth. The red book, she said she can't open because a dragon took the key from her in the 1700s. The black book is about dark evil. So this is interesting, isn't it? That and by the way, she said that we all come from Dayland. And she said we're an ultra-terrestrial. She doesn't like the word God because she said it's misused and it's not male or female. It's an ultra-terrestrial that lives with the angels and where the light lives, we all come from. So that's how he understands, you know, what we'd call source God or the universe or whatever source. I find it. Well, what I understand is that a lot of souls have come from all over the cosmos, from all over the universes, and they've come with different skills. One 10-year-old told me that he came through a portal in the sun. Now, they all seem to have different abilities, different awareness, almost like ones that come from certain star systems have certain gifts, other star systems have other gifts. So they all have maybe a different mandate, but it's all to do with the shift in human consciousness and the shift of this planet. Every one of, I mean, we get a three-year-old talks about the new Earth. And her mother, she did a script and she drew this planet. She was 4.5. This mother comes from Turkey. And she said, and I adored what this was. And she said, oh, that's the new Earth. And she said, well, can you tell me more about the new Earth? And the four-year-old said to her, no, because it's a secret. So whatever it is, it's a secret at the moment. But I sort of sense we're all being prepared. It's almost like everyone's being put in position. We've all got different roles to play. We've all got different gifts. And I think that for some, it's to do with the energy of the planet. For others, it will be due to healing. Others, it will be doing information. There's going to be a whole range of things, but we're coming from different parts of the universes and levels of dimensions to assist in this process, this major process for humanity. So in that sense, we've all got a different role tape, it's all at the same date. Some of them do, absolutely. This is what I meant with the seven-year-old. She also did the clicking, chirping sound of the mantid. They not only said it, but some of the languages cannot be translated. Some of them are like packages of information. So when you see a script that looks two-dimensional, more like a type of information that would fill in with encyclopedias. So you can't articulate that. So some of them are like that. Others are, we are able to have a translation. Some of them, they say the languages are to be felt, like, you know, they are speaking directly to, you know, the heart or to that essence. So that's how you will understand them. So, you know, they're different, but we can't always do what we do, and that's put them into human language. In a way, for those who channel, sometimes when you get information from an advanced being, it's difficult for them to tell you in human language exactly what they want to convey. So human language is actually quite limited after these intelligences, and that's why a lot is telepathic. It's a good question, and I can't qualify that other than to say that I suspect that those in, you know, that do the speaking in tongues, I suspect that giving it the UFO ET angle is that actually it's the same thing. They're doing a religious text in the same way someone religious who sees, you know, a beautiful light being somebody else who's not religious but very spiritual may say that's a light being. So it's through our own perceptions that we will understand stuff, or our own programming, our own conditioning is how we interpret, you know, the information. And that's the problem, really, is that we're all so programmed and so conditioned to see things through such a limited lens, really. But part of the important thing now is to collate data in as open a manner as possible without trying to, if you like, evaluate it through these limited models. But look at data and look at patterns as a way of understanding it, rather than saying, well, this must be this or this must be that, because we still maybe don't have the language or the understanding to really evaluate in the way that we need to. Thank you. Yes, what we're doing is a survey, which was, I think, got about 1,400 responses. I'll give you briefly some of the stats that we've got so far. About 70% had seen a UFO or witnessed by others was 65%. 57% had telepathic communications. Information on new technologies, 44%. Out-of-body experiences, 80%. Minimal interest in materialism, 85%. Saw a physical ET, 48%. Described ETs as positive, 66%, negative, 5%, both negative and positive, 17%, and neutral for 12%. Now, these are what I spoke about in my latest presentation at Nexus Conference here in the Sunshine Coast. We are releasing this because, you know, it's a point where we can start getting people to understand how important it is. So this is part of the reason we're releasing it. One of the other things with the phase two survey, please go on. We are doing the new website. We all, you know, can give you the details, or I'll give Grant details of, you know, getting the survey for yourself. In the phase two, 28% had a near-death experience with encounters. Many, 38%, had ET contact but no abduction, 70%. Connection between ETs and the spirit world, pre-birth, post-death, 85%. ETs are playful and have vision, 46%. Had communication with ETs, 87%. ETs are positive, 71%. Neutral, 21%. Negative, 11%. We've got a phase three where we're going to go into more depth. But what we're hearing here is not what media is telling you. It's not what you're hearing in, you know, all these documentaries they're putting out. All the stuff up to date has been about the 25% fear-based types. Some of those, as I say, don't realize in my work, the most traumatized being those that have high level. And this is the military abductions, not the ET ones. This is the military abductions. So we really have to start looking at this. So that's what Free already has found out. These are tremendous figures because we've never had this before. And this is why it's so important now. And why, you know, the scientists are out, because it's about providing a space now where people can feel supported, but also own it, because it's time. Because you know what? Disclosure is not going to come from the governments in the way that we want. It's got to be disclosure from the ground up, because if we wait for the governments, we could be waiting to go ahead and, you know, giving up the ghost. So this is about saying, you know what? This is my experience. Get over it. Because this is who I am. Yeah, these are people that have often had ET experiences the military know about, and they abduct them, take them to military bases. They use drugs, hypnosis, trauma, to find out what happened on the people, and gain as much information about these beings as possible. They meet them to a point where they need ETs, so that they come out absolutely terrified, either don't want to talk about it or are afraid that they get very paranoid, and this shuts them down. So one of the very interesting books on this is by Nayara Isley. She's an American, and she's written a book. I've done the foreword for this book, and it's called Out of the Shadows, Embracing the Light. So if you want to know details of that, I can send you details. She had my lab. She was in the radar in the military. She was abducted by her own people, and she had experiences in many underground bases. And I actually found her story profound. She discovered through body work that this had happened to her. And this is her journey through healing, but also because she said her star family, who ultimately helped her to understand why this happened to her, was she was supposed to write about it and expose it. And this is what has to happen. And Dr. Stephen Greer also says that a majority of the, certainly the abusive experiences are actually our own military, these covert agencies that want to get as much information as possible out of individuals they know have been picked up. And that's why there's black helicopters over people who've had experiences. They know from the fact you're being picked up and your energetic signature. So they know who to target. But this is a whole other area. And that's just an overview. Go and look it up for yourselves and be informed. I'll send that to you. No problem. And look, everyone in the room, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And if I can help any of you, then my email is on my website, resources you need. Thank you again, everyone. I know it's probably getting late your end. Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure. Okay, take care. Bye. Night to you. Take care.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.